Today we are going to continue and actually back up to and start back over with Acts chapter 2. Actually, I want to back up to the previous verse of Acts 1:26 to get the context to be able to most easily identify the pronoun of who they are in Acts chapter 2 verse 1. And Kaufman talks about this too in, I printed off his commentary. But we'll start with Acts 1 verse 26. And they, and this is the apostles, cast their lots, and the lot fell on Matthias, and he was numbered with the 11 apostles. When the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. Well, who are they? They were the 12 apostles now. It was Matthias and the other 11. So now they're a whole 12. That is who they are. That's from the previous verse. So Matthias was numbered with the 11 apostles, and now they are assembled with one accord in one place. Verse 2. Now, this is the fulfillment of what Jesus told them twice. In verses 5 and verses 8 of chapter 1, that they were going to be baptized with the Holy Spirit, and they will receive the Holy Spirit with power. He told them two different ways about what, and not many days from now, which it was 10 days is what it was from his ascension. It's when this day of Pentecost. So this is the time, and this is what Jesus was telling was going to come upon the apostles. So, verse 2, and suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. Then there appeared to them, these apostles, divided tongues as of fire, and one sat up on each of them. One divided tongue of fire sat upon each of the 12 apostles. Okay, any questions or comments on anything here? Kaufman's comments on these were about the phrase, they were all together. He said, who are they? Scholars disagree radically about this, but the conviction here is that the reference is to the 12. They were the only ones to whom Jesus had promised such an outpouring of the Spirit. Furthermore, Peter's words in Acts 2:32, that we are all witnesses of Christ's resurrection, can refer only to the 12, because only two disciples were found among the whole 120 who were eligible to join them as witnesses. So I'm going to look at that. We're going to jump ahead just right here. Acts 2:32, this is Peter talking to these devout Jews that had come to the day of Pentecost, that were witnessing all of this, of what has happened to the 12 apostles. And he says to these devout Jews, this Jesus God has raised up, which we are all witnesses. Well, who were all the witnesses? It was only the 12 apostles. There were only two out of the 120. So it can't be that this is the 120. Now, when Kaufman said scholars disagree radically, I'm going to say that it's more of a majority view that it's the 120 that had experienced this and received this Holy Spirit baptism. But it is not. From tracing, finding the antecedent of the pronoun, they, and going back to Acts 1:26, that is a, that's a grammatical proof. And then, which there's several, we've traced all through Acts 1, the whole thing is about the apostles. So, but then, even here is a great point. I'm glad he brought this out because I did not have this down otherwise. But in verse 32, when Peter is telling them that they were all witnesses, the only witnesses of his resurrection that were eligible to be apostles, that was the requirement, had to be with them all the time and see the resurrection and the ascension. It was only these 12. So These are the only ones that receive this Holy Spirit baptism here, verses 1 through 4. So what Kaufman continues, what the word all surely means in Acts 2:32 must therefore be the meaning here. We all, as used by Peter, identifies the they all as used here by Luke. When Peter said it, see, he was one of the 12, so he said we all were witnesses, whereas when Luke, he was talking in the third person, because he was not part of the apostleship, and so he said they all, referring to the apostles. So we all by Peter and they all by Luke were all the same, talking about the 12 apostles. He continues, also numbered with the 11 apostles, as it stands at the end of Acts 1, requires 11 apostles to be understood as the antecedent of they in Acts 2 verses 1. The fact that the antecedent of any pronoun is found by referring back to the nearest noun or pronoun with which it agrees in number clinches the argument of the baptism of the Holy Spirit applying only to the 12 apostles.
And,
yes.
It could only be the 12 apostles because the audience they were talking to had to be baptized.
Yes.
And the apostles were baptized by the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
They were not.
That's right.
So they had to go through baptism itself. If the tongues of fire had been on their heads,
yes, that's right. That's right.
So it just kind of cements it.
Yes. There's lots of different avenues to be a God. The Holy Spirit through this text has given lots of avenues to understand who they are here. And that's also a good point. But there's multiple avenues that nails it down and everything boils down to the apostles. And so it's very, very unfortunate that I really think that it is a minority view and the vast majority is saying and thinking and teaching, false teaching, that it's either the 120, I think that's more the majority, but even down to this whole group of devout Jews that have shown up on the day of Pentecost from all over, that they received it all too. I've even read that. I thought, oh boy, that's even more, you know, even worse. even more of a stretch of false teaching.
No, and were the apostles performing miracles before this?
Yes, yes. You know, they could even cast out demons. You know, yeah, they were, they could perform, Jesus gave and not only the apostles, remember, there were 70 that Jesus had sent out to the Gentiles.
Oh, yeah.
And now, it's not stated specifically, but what the text does state is the apostles came and said, there's people that are casting out demons in your name, but they're not one of us 12. And leave him alone. He's new. Who is not against us is for us. And he also, which Kaufman said, the best explanation is those were the 70 that some of these 12 had run into. And but he had sent them out to the Gentile realm. And it's not specifically stated they went out to the Gentile realm, but Jesus told them, whenever you go and eat, don't, if they offer you unclean foods, you eat whatever they give you. There's no, he removed the food restriction because Kaufman's comment, the best explanation I've heard is it was soon to be removed anyway. The old covenant was going to be removed, and this was so close, just within a year or two, probably at this time, that he was no longer telling them to, you know, we're not going to be binding on these Gentiles. What's about to be abolished even for the Israelites, for the Jews.
Yeah.
And so, but yes, they were already performing in the Jesus's ministry, his 3.5 years. They were performing miracles even then. But This is a, this what we're reading here only happened twice. This one time here in Acts 2 and then in Acts 10 upon the Gentiles, which was Cornelius' household, which we'll get into more here. Kaufman covers that. Yes. This was all after this. You know, this is happening in 30 AD.
Yeah.
And this is just 53 days after Jesus was crucified. 50 days after he's...
They didn't understand what was going on before.
That's right. Well, they didn't even understand what was going on and what was about to happen here in Acts 1. They thought when he first told them that they are going about to be baptized by the Holy Spirit not many days from now, the question they said, so is that the time you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel? Which what that meant was, kick the Romans, we're going to have a battle or whatever. God's going to kick the Romans out, and now we're not going to be occupied here in Jerusalem any longer, Judea, by these Romans that we hate. And taxing us out of existence, you know. and so, yes, they had fundamental misunderstanding about God's kingdom. But all of the Jews did, and guess what? Unfortunately, they still do today. They still think that it's going to be a military kingdom, is what they're still looking for, just like they were then. You know, Jesus made it clear that, and they just missed it, but you know, that my kingdom is not of this world. It's not a physical kingdom. It's a spiritual kingdom. And then his rationale to Pilate was, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight. My apostles would fight. But you see, they're not fighting because my kingdom is not from here. It's a spiritual kingdom. But they didn't understand it then. You know, somewhat hard to maybe get a grasp 2,000 years later, even, definitely for the Jews, and I'm going to say even others, hard to get the grasp of this.
So Christ told the apostles, I'm sending a comforter.
Yes, yes.
For you to understand.
That's another term. It's a synonym for the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus used different terms to mean the same thing. He also called... Hades, he referred to it as torments in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. He then referred also paradise and Abraham's bosom. He called it Abraham's bosom in the parable. But then on the cross, he said, today you will be with me in paradise, referring to the same place. So paradise is the same as Abraham's bosom. And then Hades and torments are the same term used for the same thing. Now, that's different from Gehenna.
Yeah.
Gehenna is the only term that should be used translated as hell. That's the final place of torment. That's the eternal dwelling place that was made for the devil and his angels. And unfortunately, unrighteous, disobedient humans will also be cast there. But... you know, ideally, no humans would reject God's will and refuse to be obedient and be disobedient to God's will. But because of that, well, guess what? Well, I'm going to be cast the same place that was originally and ideally only prepared for the devil and his angels. But disobedient humans are also going to be cast. And so that's Gehenna, the eternal fire that will never be quenched. Okay, so so the fact that the antecedent of any pronoun is found by referring back to the nearest pronoun or noun with which it agrees in number clinches the argument of the baptism of the Holy Spirit applying only to the 12 apostles. The people assembled together and filled with the Holy Spirit were not the 120 disciples mentioned in a parenthesis in the preceding chapter, but they are the 12 apostles that were assembled together and filled with the Holy Spirit. Only the 12. This is made certain by the grammatical connection between the first verse of chapter 2 and the last verse of chapter 1. Okay. So now verse 4. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit. All of the 12 apostles were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. Kaufman said about they were all filled with the Holy Spirit. The apostles have now experienced the sound of the rushing mighty wind. They have seen the tongues of fire. They are now immersed in the influence and power of the Holy Spirit. This experience is the baptism of the Holy Spirit as Jesus promised them in chapter 1, verse 5. To be filled with the Holy Spirit indicates the apostles are filled mentally or under the full influence of the Holy Spirit. The promise of the baptism of the Holy Spirit and of power is now fulfilled. The apostles are now divinely empowered to preach the good news of God's kingdom to all nations. Now the phrase, began to speak with other tongues. Kaufman said, despite the insistence of some that this has reference to ecstatic utterances like those of so-called tongues today, such a view is refuted absolutely by the fact that men of many nations understood every word in their native languages. Nothing like this was ever seen either before or after this astounding event. So, now we all know today the people that make the false claim that they're speaking in tongues, they are just speaking gibberish that no human understands. It is not a language, it's just baby gibberish is all that it is. And it's very unfortunate that this very unique experience that the apostles experienced here and then these devout Jews were able to witness has gotten so skewed. Well, it's just like trampled underfoot and just disregarded just as like trash and junk. Because this was very holy spiritual teaching that the Holy Spirit was giving them in the people's own dialect of their native tongue, and it was nothing like what they've distorted today of tongue speaking, of just gibberish, mass confusion is what they call tongues today, and God is not the author of confusion. And that was in the direct context, 1 Corinthians 14, that God is not the author of confusion, talking about speaking in tongues. And so God would never have done this gibberish confusion. Okay. So nothing like this was ever seen either before or after this astounding event. The confusion of tongues caused the dispersal of men at the Tower of Babel, and the gift of tongues reunited them as one people on the day of Pentecost. So, you know, last week we looked at a context that I was glad that Kaufman came up with and that I don't think I ever would have put together, but it was at the establishment of the Old Covenant, 3,000 Israelites were killed because they were disobedient to God, and it was swift and severe. Whereas, contrast that, whenever God established His kingdom on the day of Pentecost, 3,000 were saved by being added to God's kingdom. So that's the contrast. Now here's another contrast of the Old Testament example and here in Acts 2 example. God confused the languages to disperse the men at the Tower of Babel because they refused. They were being disobedient to God. He told them to fill the entire world and procreate, and they refused to do that. He wanted them to spread over the whole earth, and they were just staying right there around the Tower of Babel of what is thought to be in modern-day Iraq. Mesopotamia is what it was known as more in the thousands of years ago. And they refused to obey God. And so, to disperse them, he confused their tongues. He gave them all the different languages, but every family, every group only spoke one language. He didn't confuse them within their group, and so then they were able to communicate amongst each other, but they couldn't communicate with the other groups. And so that dispersed them. To contrast here, with this gift of tongues that the Holy Spirit gave these 12 apostles, it reunited these devout Jews into one people. So instead of casting out on the Tower of Babel and making them spread apart, they're brought together with one experience here of hearing with the apostles speaking each of the tongues of these of their native tongues of these foreigner Jews that were living abroad. The event at Babel was a direct intervention of God in human history, and the same thing with opposite purpose is apparent here. The action at Babel was not repeated, nor was this. The apostles spoke languages that they had been entirely ignorant of before this. They did not speak one or two words of another language or stammer out some broken sentences, but spoke each language as properly, elegantly, and fluently as if it had been their native language. It would be logical to understand each of the 12 speaking in a different area of the great temple square, and in each instance speaking in particular language of each separate group. And I've heard this before, so I've heard this from at least one other man, and maybe it's only one other man. This is a logical explanation of what happened here, is each of the 12 apostles could speak a different language, one language, one foreign language. And so they all separated in this temple square where all of these devout Jews had come into on the day of Pentecost. And they were just somewhat of a big area, big open public square space. And they just separated each of the 12 everywhere. And then as the people were coming in, they would hear their own language in their own dialect be spoken. Well, then they would naturally go to that. Just like if we're in somewhat of a big area, you hear people speaking Spanish over here and maybe Chinese or Russian or just foreign language. You're not going to go there. And then if you hear English over here, well, guess what? You're going to go over here and let's hear what this is, what all's going down. I want to hear what they're having to say. So that, to me, is the logical explanation, most logical explanation of how this was done in an orderly manner. And we know that this was done in an orderly, not a disorganized manner. It was very orderly and organized. And Kaufman says, there is no way to understand this as a group of 12 men standing closely together and all speaking at once. That would have been mass confusion. All different. If they were just here in a row and all speaking different languages. Now that's also probably one of the more majority views maybe. But that did not happen in any way. That would have just been mass confusion. Nobody would have been able to understand anything. But if you're separated apart, then you can hear each language distinctly. There's no way to understand this as a group of 12 men standing closely together and all speaking at once. Later, Peter did stand up with the 11, but then there were not many speakers, but there's only one. So they went from, they were all speaking in different languages. Now Peter is speaking only by himself and in one language when he starts his address. And then obviously there he's speaking in a common language that they all understood. And I would think a prime thought of a prime suspect of the language would be Greek, Koine Greek. That would be a language that they would have all understood. I don't know if Aramaic, I think that was more of just in Judea area. So, but I think probably Koine Greek would be the prime suspect of the language that Peter then talked to the whole group that they all understood, because the Greek Empire was so pervasive. Everyone knew Greek. Yes.
There's 14
15, there's 15 places. There are 15, right, that's an outstanding point. There are 15 countries or places that are mentioned here that they came from. Now I've got 12 apostles. So the thought is explanation would be that two or three of the apostles, once you get a group and you're speaking in some language, now you start in another language to get one of the other groups. Either that, or then out of these 15, there may have only been 12 native dialects among these 15 countries. We see whenever we, and you know, I forgot, I intended to get the correct map up to show where all this was, but I forgot that when I came in this morning. Well, I will look at that next week. I will look at this. But there are some, it was North Africa, there's Libya and Egypt. They may have had more of a common language. So some of these may have shared a common language, and it might have come down to 12. Other than that, if it's not that, then some of these apostles, a few of these apostles spoke at least two languages. So, you know, one for a time and then switch over to a new language to get another group. So, but that's a very good observation that you made, that we do have more than 12 countries or places that these people have come from all over the Roman Empire. Okay. They were not uttering unintelligible sounds, nor using a mere jargon of syllables with no meaning. Their sentences were clear and their words were distinct, so that every man heard them speaking in his own language. This phenomenon was obviously the baptism of the Holy Spirit. We can know as an absolute certainty that Acts 2 verse 4 is the literal fulfillment of Acts 1 verse 5. Jesus had promised the apostles the baptism of the Holy Spirit, and here is the fulfillment of his promise. Okay, any questions or comments on anything up to this point?